time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 684 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. And it all starts with the return of Jeremy Adams, who recently signed an exclusive contract with DC, then concludes with DM Ray from the Madcaps issue 2 coming soon to Kickstarter. Jeremy Adams, one of the most prolific scribes in the entertainment industry today, with credits as the acclaimed writer of films, television series, and comics, has signed a multi-year contract to pen comics for DC, the home of iconic characters such as Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and others. We talk about his current projects, including Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, and Aquaman, all of which I'm greatly enjoying. We also discuss several excellent series he's worked on in his career, then explore what this new contract means for Jeremy and us fans as he moves into the future. Then everything wraps up with my fun conversation with creator DM Ray from the Madcaps, which will be launching soon on Kickstarter. Here's the book's description. A successful interrogation of a drug peddler brings our protagonists to the territory of its distributor. You can now sign up to receive notifications when this excellent project launches, and that's very soon. During our discussion, we find out how this terrific comic came to be, explore the various characters, and find out what else Ray will be bringing our way soon. Be sure to sign up to learn more about this excellent book once you finish listening to this episode. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what they both have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Jeremy Adams, described as one of the most prolific scribes in the entertainment industry today, with credits as the acclaimed writer of films, television series, and comics. And the big news is that he has signed a multi-year contract to pen comics for DC. How you doing, Jeremy?
I'm doing great. It's great to be back.
It's good to talk with you. I saw you at MegaCon and stuff like that. You're getting around these days, and I have to tell you, as I was telling you before we started to record, I didn't realize how big of a fan of yours that I really was.
Oh, it's unbelievably kind. You know, listen, they let me in the door, and I refuse to let them kick me out, you know? So I'm working hard.
Well, good. Well, believe me, I'm enjoying it because I like this. I got to read a couple more bits out of the news release, which made me smile. It says, the multi-year deal with DC follows Adams' incredibly successful 35-issue run as the writer on The Flash. His current trio of series, which includes Green Lantern, Aquaman, and Green Lantern Corps. Yeah. And they were involved with events like 2023's Dark Crisis and 2024's Absolute Power.
Well, I mean, as far as being involved with those, that's all Josh Williamson. I just tied in, you know. I pride myself of trying to do tie-ins that actually work, though. So,
well, that's good, because believe me, there's a lot of tie-ins I read and I go, what did this have to do with?
Yeah, totally.
So now there's one other thing I got to do, because I was stunned. I didn't know this. Adams has been a mainstay in DC's animated collaborations with Warner Brothers Animation. He scripted three key films in the storied history of the DC Universe. Batman, Soul of the Dragon. I didn't realize you had done that.
Yeah.
Batman, Superman, Battle of the Super Sons, which I loved. And you contributed one of the vignettes for Justice Society, World War II, which I love that one too.
Thank you. Yeah.
All those were good things. And which leads me to a question, though. Now that you're doing this, are you able to continue to write for the DC Animateds, or are you sticking to the comics now?
No, absolutely. It's mostly just comic books, and for the exclusivity anyways. I do a lot with Lego, Just finished up running a show for them, and I have another DTV coming out in the fall. But for comic books, you know, it's all exclusive to DC. I find that I have a pretty big capacity to do multiple series, so it's been really gratifying and fun because I love comics.
Well, I got to tell you, I caught up on Flash Gordon.
Oh, fun.
Which I really enjoyed. And there's something about you writing adventure and action that really works. And I just, you know, I can't put it down. I'm going to get to the end and go, that's it? Oh, no. Where's the rest of it?
I appreciate that. I'm a big, you know, usually they categorize film or whatever into action adventure, but I flip it. I'm into adventure action. You know, growing up in the 80s, it's like all the films I really love, whether it was Goonies or Raiders, it's action, but it's mostly adventure. And I love adventure. I absolutely adore it. I love, you know, going to new places and seeing new things and riddles and puzzles and all that stuff. So that's definitely where my heart lies.
Well, boy, it shows. I have to tell you, I read Flash Gordon. I thought, wow, I said, he even writes non-DC characters really well.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a really fun, you know, kind of just, I was pitching creator-owned books to Mad Cave, and they weren't interested in those. So they said, hey, we've got some of our own stuff that we're doing, like License. Would you want to do anything? And they named a bunch. And when they said Flash Gordon, I was like, yeah, I'll do Flash Gordon. I'm a big fan of pulp sci-fi, John Carter, Mars, Edgar Rice Burroughs type things. And, I loved the old film. I did an internship for the producer of that old film, Dino De Laurentiis. And I love kind of pulpy sci-fi stuff.
Well, I have to say, last time you and I talked, I kind of got my 2 cents in about Green Lantern, which I think is still shining bright way that you're doing. And I read the first issue of the Green Lantern Corps, which I also enjoyed. And you're co-writing that, right? Who's the person you're working with there?
Morgan Hampton, his name is. He had done a stint on Cyborg, and he's a young lad compared to me. And we're having a great time just coming up with some fun story ideas. And, you know, Green Lantern Corps and Green Lantern, they're very connected with the overarching plot that's happening right now. But we get with Green Lantern Corps, we get a good opportunity to shine the light on a bunch of different lanterns. You know, it's kind of a rotating cast in that book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I told you last time, I loved the Tales of the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, yeah.
When they came out. I mean, Alan Moore did a story where there was a Green Lantern in a place that had no light.
Oh, that's so cool.
And
that's
how can that possibly be? But he really did a good job with that. And so I every time there's Tales of the Green Lantern Corps, I am there because so interesting and sci-fi. That's the thing.
Oh, yeah. I have a few Tales of the Green Lantern Corps myself that I picked up that Marv Wolfman was writing. And the covers were the ones that just drew me in because I was like, what the heck is this? You know? And I love it when they do those kind of one-off, wacky, strange, interesting kind of Star Trek episodes, you know?
Yeah. Well, we did that dead Green Lantern for a while and a squirrel Green Lantern for a while. Yeah. There was wild stuff in there. I was really going, what the? What you're doing with it, though, I think shines. That whole business with Carol Ferris to me is still – it's low-hanging fruit that I'm so glad you picked because, man, it's so much fun to read his relationship with her.
Thank you. Yeah, it's also fun for me to kind of like, you know, I did it with Wally and Linda. I just really like digging in those relationships. And with Carol, you know, kind of promoting her as a superhero in her own right has been really fun because Mark Wade is using her now in the Justice League Unlimited, and she crosses over a lot, you know, back in obviously Green Lantern, and it's neat. It's really neat.
Okay. Well, I, as much as I love Green Lantern, I got to talk about Aquaman.
Let's do it.
Aquaman to me is Aquaman is one of those characters like Green Arrow and stuff that somehow he just never seems to catch traction.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
But you are doing really fascinating stuff with this character.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of pressure, you know, but it's fun. It's fun. I think I'm with you. I always find it very strange. It's like, and we'll see if people maintain their interest in what I'm doing. But I just try to write what will captivate me and what I'll have fun with, and hopefully other people enjoy it too.
Well, issue 2 just came out, and I've been reading that, and there's a big surprise who's in there.
Yeah.
We won't spoil it here, but there's some the whole business with the Dark Tide has really surprised me, I have to say, and I'm not going to spoil it here, but let's just say Aquaman's going where no Aquaman has gone before.
Yeah, it's really – you know, maybe I've bitten off more than I can chew, but I'm definitely having fun doing it.
I love it when I'm not used to Aquaman. Of course, you know, Aquaman has been many different things. In The Brave and the Bold, he was a braggart. You know,
outrageous. Going, yeah.
And all that stuff. And then other ones. But in here, he's actually kind of brutal, which, you know, as a king, there's one place where he yells out, "It's time to die."
Yeah.
And I went, Aquaman saying that?
Yeah.
Wow. So it's I really enjoy seeing Aquaman. And of course, as a king, he's going to have to make those kinds of decisions.
That's right.
I think the artwork too is just really great. Timms is just doing a beautiful job.
So good. Between him and Dan Mora, like I said, there's something happening in Costa Rica. There's something in the water that's made them incredibly nice people, but unbelievably talented. You know, just everything they do, clean lines, very quick, very wonderful to work with. Awesome people.
Well, the thing that they're up against, you've done something that another thing that surprised me, and I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, but, you know, we've seen the green and the red in DC, and you're bringing out another color.
Yeah, the blue.
Yeah, I was shocked when I read that. So wait a second, we haven't seen that before.
I know. Yeah, and I was surprised. It's one of my joys working for DC is to add as much as I can to the toy box. You know, I mean, the reality is that I grew up reading these books that spurred, a massive amount of imagination in myself, and I can only hope to be able to add stuff to that for the next generation to feel inspired and, you know, have their imagination wheels turning when they read my stuff. You know, it's one of the cool things about having a continuous universe that's been going on for, you know, 60 years.
Well, see, what you're doing is just like what Geoff Johns did with Green Lantern. Everybody was saying, oh, there's nothing to Green Lantern. There's nothing more he can do. You know, we've seen everything. He makes great big fists and stuff like that, but that's all he can really do. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, Geoff comes out with all these yellow lanterns and orange lanterns and magenta lanterns and all these other things. And I'm going, I'm always smiling when I see that, because all these people who said, nobody's going to like that. There's nothing you can do with that.
Yeah.
I remember the Black Lanterns was one that really.
Oh, yeah. Black at Night. Oof.
I was in a comic shop reading the issue where we find out, gosh, I hate to spoil it, but it was the guy who he wanted to be a Black Lion, he killed himself to become a Black Lion.
Yeah.
I remember standing in the store and my jaw hitting the ground. Everybody's going, what's going on? What's going on? I can't believe what I just read.
Yeah.
So that, are you thinking about bringing some of those other color lanterns in?
Right now, mostly I'm dealing with the fractured spectrum. So it's going to be some of the main colors, but also some new ones, and just eventually maybe. But right now I don't want to retread as much stuff as much as I want to kind of take it and spin it off into new directions. Mm-hmm. But inevitably a lot of those ideas I'm sure will circulate back into the book.
Well, I got to get back to Aquaman because there's all this wonderful stuff going on with him. The business that happened that gave Aquaman Mira's powers.
Yes.
That, you know, in the cartoon series way back in the late 60s and 70s, he was able to throw hard water balls. And so now you have gone back and pulled that back into the modern setting. And see, I Mira was, I always thought was too powerful. I mean, she made Aquaman look kind of weak by comparison.
Yeah.
But now Aquaman is the king. He's got all the toys. He can, he can make hard water. He can do all kinds of stuff. And I like that because now it makes Aquaman a force to be reckoned with. And I think you're doing a great job of beefing him up.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. No, by the end of this run, I hope I hope that all of DC is intimidated by the strength of Aquaman, you know?
See, that's funny to say about Aquaman.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, Jeff Johns wrote a thing where he's in a restaurant and people want him to order fish, and of course he doesn't do it. And I thought, gosh, that's really low level.
Yeah.
As a king. But what you're doing to me is just the end of issue two, the last page, which I won't spoil.
Yeah.
Something happens that I think we're going to have to see ramifications for issues and issues afterwards.
Yeah.
I won't say what, but holy smoke, if you read issue two and get to the last page, you, like I was shocked. I was surprised.
Well, yeah, it's going to be, this is going to be a journey to be sure. Mm-hmm.
Great. Just great. Cause you're making, like I said, Aquaman is somebody now, and he is going to, I've always thought the king of the ocean ought to be a really formidable person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, he cuts his hand off and puts a sword on it. And stuff.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, oh, that's not Aquaman.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, it was interesting. I mean, Peter David, of course, you know, he likes doing those kinds of things.
Oh yeah. He was taking, I mean, that whole run is just so, you know, separate, but such a big swing. Like Peter David is, he was, I mean, that guy wrote more than I'll forget, you know, it's, he was a machine.
Well, I'm curious, what about Aquaman and Mira's son? Where is that? Because, you know, unfortunately, the reboots and switching around and stuff, I've lost track of him. Is he still around?
No. You know, in fact, somebody told me recently that his son was it murdered by Black Manta in a particular version of continuity?
Okay.
And, you know, that's unfortunately, that's one of the weird things about DC continuity is trying to suss out what's real, what's not real, what counts, what doesn't count. And that's left up to me. So I don't know if I often will come up with like, hey, can we use this or can we not use this? And sometimes I get the okay. Sometimes I don't, you know, right. So it's one of those things, but I don't know.
I get a little confused with all the reboots and
things. Yeah, everybody does. Yeah.
So I'm always like I'm interested because that was one of the great animated shows where Aquaman and his son, he had to save his son or cut his hand off and stuff. That was one of the stories they did there.
Yeah.
I remember sitting there with my jaw on the ground. That's the way Aquaman, I'd be like, what you're doing to me is kingly. This is what a king has to deal with.
Right.
And to me, that is where has Aquaman been from being a king? Because, you know, I don't know where the people of Atlantis are. And I'm going like, where are they?
Yeah.
I have no idea where they are. And so I'm really fascinated because, see, you're spinning things that I never expected because, you know, the Dome City of Atlantis was in there and everybody just sort of, it just stayed there.
Yeah.
But you're twisting things around and having fun with them so that I'm going like, I don't know what you're going to do next. And I love not knowing.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I'm really glad.
Because, you know, so many times people, it's the same old, you know, they're always trying to bash the Dome City. And I thought, what would that matter? Because they're water breathers. It doesn't hurt anything.
Yeah. I wanted to get away from anything that would make me fall back on a story that had really been done before, you know, and that's a tall order, you know, but it's about putting him in a situation, an environment that we're not necessarily used to him being in and then taking him on this journey that really has him on his back foot, you know,
which is so much fun to read. It's so great. The things you're doing with all these characters are making them vibrant and interesting to read. And, you know, I can't wait for the next issue. I kind of wish there was more than one a month.
Yeah, I know. I love doing more than one a month because otherwise you got to wait and then be like, oh, what happened last time?
Yeah, that's right. Well, see, sometimes I keep issues around so that I can catch up before I read the current issue so I know what's going on with that. So I'm kind of garbling these up because I'm interested in all of them. As far as Green Lantern and stuff goes, you're talking about the fact that Justice League now has Carol Ferris over there involved. Is she going to be less involved in Green Lantern and more in the Justice League?
Yeah, I think more, but she shows up in Green Lantern quite a bit. But we wanted to definitely elevate her as her own superhero presence in Justice League, which I think Mark is doing wonderfully. But she's inextricably linked to Hal, obviously, and the being the last of the Star Sapphires, she's inextricably linked to, you know, what will happen later on in the series.
See, is that going to stay to be true, though? Because every time somebody says they're the last of this, the last person of Krypton, the last, right. Is she really? Well, of course, that'd be spoilers.
Well, it'd be spoilers, but I mean, it is DC Comics. It's like saying, is that superhero really going to be dead? It's like, well, maybe, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like that. What you're doing to me is so much fun. And I really enjoy it. I have a suggestion. Okay. And I don't know if the error is going to come to be, but I would love to see it. There's a DC character that I'm passionately in love with and want to see more of, but I'm afraid of how they might bring that character back, and that's Hawkman.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's in JSA, I believe.
Yeah, but you know, the series that Robert Venditti did was so terrific, and it didn't sell, and it didn't go anywhere. And I'm going like, if that series doesn't make it, is there anybody that can do something with Hawkman that will really make him fly? You know, to be funny about it.
But as his own series, you mean? Yeah.
Yes. Because I love that series that Venditti did.
Yeah.
And I was so brokenhearted when that ended. So if I can make that suggestion to you, if somebody comes to you and say, what other DC character would I like to do? Say Hawkman. I'd love to see what you would do.
I feel like Hawkman's way too intimidating, though Venditti did an incredible job to kind of streamline the mythology.
Well, the Hawkman's on Krypton. Mm-hmm. Hawkman's on all these planets all over the universe.
Yeah.
I was like, that was really brilliant. And I loved it and stuff like that. Which leads me to a question. I don't know if you can answer it right now or not. You've got three books going on right now.
Right.
Are there other things that you've got in the works that you can talk about?
Well, funny enough, it's like three. I have four if you count Flash Gordon. I can't talk about it, but I am doing a little brief stint on something that I'm very, very excited about. And you know, I continually pitch things to DC in hopes that they'll bite on another idea. I can't really talk about it. No.
Say Hawkman. But, you know, I meant to ask you, you know, cause I was talking with one of the other creators who got an exclusive contract with DC. And he told me previously he used to have to spend 50% of his time finding work and 50% of the time doing work. Now that you've got an exclusive contract, is that changed for you? Are you actually going to be able to do more?
It lessens some of the sting of having to look for comic book work, but I'm such a freelancer at heart. I'm always looking for some type of work, you know? So if it's not that, then it's 100%, you know, animation work, or I use that time to try to pitch something new. I definitely keep looking for work.
See, I got to pay attention when I see your name around. So you've got a name like mine that's sort of common. And so I see my name somewhere, and there's a guy who like is promoting legalization of marijuana. His name is Wayne Hall, and he lives up in the northeast of the U.S. And I'm always getting things saying about marijuana. I'm going, I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
So when I see your name, it's enough of a common name that sometimes I don't pay attention. I'm going to have to pay more attention.
Well, please do.
Because you did Young Justice too, from what I understand.
Yeah, I co-wrote an episode. But that, you know, with that show, it was so much Greg Weisman and Brandon Vietti's show, you know, and we just stepped in to kind of help, but it was so fully formed. It was fun to work with them, but, you know, I wish I could take more credit for my episode, but honestly, that's so much a baby of those two genius minds.
Well, what about Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans?
Yeah, what was interesting about that is Marley Halpern Grazer did the heavy lifting, and I was called in to do some punch ups and rework some of Raven's storyline and stuff, and that was an exciting thing to be part of. That's the only time I've ever been part of Teen Titans Go. So, you know, it was a fun thing to do and well received, really wonderful. The guy who directed it, just a genius. And, but that was really fun. And just being part of Warner Animation, and I would go from Super Sons to, you know, Soul of the Dragon to Mortal Kombat to, you know, just step in every day. It felt like a new adventure in terms of what I got to do. And it was such a glorious time, honestly.
Mm-hmm. You might do that if the opportunity arises.
I mean, if they asked me, I'll do anything. I'm that type of guy. But even like when we were talking, I was talking with my friend Tim Sheridan. We were talking about Justice League Action the other day, and we were just, it was such a thrill because we had really just started our animation career and be able to do these short superhero things, to write about Mr. Miracle and Batman. And, and you know, I wish we could do it again.
Well, you know, the one episode that always stands out to me is Harley Quinn and the Super Ape.
No, who wrote that one? I forget.
I forget who wrote that one, but I remember sitting going, how are they ever going to make that work? And yet it was this brilliant episode that was fun to watch and stuff like that. And then, of course, the Christmas one was one of my favorite.
I think Alan Burnett, Jim Krieg, all the people that have been, you know, whether it's James Tucker, Bruce Timm, or Butch Luchik, they're all geniuses. And, you know, Warner Animation is very smart because they let creators be creative and they don't bog them down with too many notes. And they're really fans. Like, I don't think I've met anybody there that's not a real fan. And it shows, because that stuff is always usually top tier, you know?
I can't let you go without talking about Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Because you've done two full-length Scooby-Doo films as well as the Scooby Natural episode on Supernatural. What's it like to do those? Because Scooby-Doo is an established franchise.
I heard it was the fourth most recognized character in the world, which is interesting to me. I love Scooby-Doo. I love Scooby-Doo. And one of the projects was one of the hardest projects I've ever done. Scooby Natural, though, was Jim and I wrote that, and even to this day, people just come up and they're just like, that's the greatest thing. I mean, we got to walk into an established show and do something insane. And it's one of those beloved shows that people will always bring up. And if they ever bring up crossovers, that's going to be brought up. And you know, full thanks to everybody, not just the Supernatural side, but the Warner Animation side, to let us take these beloved icons and do something really fun with it. I loved it. And working with somebody like Matthew Lillard, who's a, you know, generational talent, or Frank Welker, who is voiced everything, you know, the same with Gray Delisle, like, holy cow, that lady is voiced everything. And it's sweet. And it's just getting to be a little piece of history, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, Scooby-Doo, for the longest time, we're always catching human beings masquerading as...
Yes.
Then all of a sudden, the movies took this pivot, and all my friends came to me and said, holy smoke, are you watching the Scooby-Doo movies? I said, oh, no, I've seen Scooby-Doo. It's the same old, same old. Oh, no, they said, there are real supernatural things going on in there.
Yeah.
Really? I said, so I started to look at them, and your stuff... Which ones are the films that you did?
So the funny thing is, I did I co-wrote one called I think it was like a Scoob in King Arthur's Court. I did one that is you know, loathed among Scooby fans, which is Return to Zombie Island. So Zombie Island was the one that first showed real supernatural stuff. And we were tasked with doing a sequel. My boss is a big proponent of what you said. It's supposed to be non-supernatural. That's the point of Scooby-Doo, is to make sure kids realize, hey, you don't need to be afraid. And so we were kind of reworking it. It's a fun, quirky piece, but you know, internally, there was a lot of weird issues that came along with it. And then Scooby Natural. I feel like there was another Scooby I did, but you know, there I did a lot of these Scooby shorts, like Lego Scooby shorts, and Scooby always comes back around in some fashion.
Interesting, interesting. Well, before I let you go, how do people follow you on social media? What should they do?
So they can either go to my website, which is spacekicker.com, which has my Substack and my social media handles. I mean, usually I'm on X or Instagram under Space Kicker, and there you go.
Okay, so I'm dying to know. I want so bad to get spoilers, but I shouldn't ask that. I want to know what you're working on next, because the four that you're working on, is that going to keep you busy for a while? It even sounds like you're still looking for other things.
I'm always looking for other things. I mean, I'm always pitching other things. Yeah, it's going to keep me working, but I always want to, you know, idle hands are the devil's work, my friend.
Doesn't sound like you get idle hands.
No, I don't.
But I still want to put a pitch in Hawkman. Think Hawkman.
All right.
That's what you should do, because that's the good stuff. Well, Jeremy, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
So much fun
that you do. I'm so glad you got an exclusive contact with DC. It's going to be good for you and DC and for your fans, including me, to be able to see what you're doing. So all I can say is just keep up the wonderful stuff.
Thank you so much.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance.
Intellectual, a devout farmer, a good-hearted charlatan, and a social facilitator. This circle of friends shall reunite in their hometown, Ivywood. Before they can depart for employment, they are interrupted by a local drug problem which carries hidden, sinister undertones.
The Madcaps is a medieval fantasy miniseries about the reunion of four friends interrupted by a local drug problem. And I'm talking today with the creator of said book, and that's DM Ray. How you doing?
I'm doing very well and very excited to talk about what I'm bringing to the table.
Great, great, because the Madcaps issue 2 is what's going to be. And you were telling me before we started recording, it's all going to start on April 1st?
Yep, issue 2 launches on April 1st, and you will have the option of purchasing issue 1 as well and catching up.
Very good. Right now, issue 2 has a little bit of a different explanation. It says, a successful interrogation of a drug peddler brings our protagonists to the territory of its distributor.
And so, it's going to be... Yeah, so in the first issue, their interruption, it starts off with an undead outbreak. And what happens is these fellas, they're not mercenaries and they're not per se fighters, even though one definitely looks the part. His look is predominantly ceremonial. It's to reflect his culture. They aid in the guards helping stave off this outbreak. But after the undead are dispatched of the dwarf of the group, the full-blooded dwarf named Sarlacc, he recognizes one of the bodies as a local junkie. And after examining the body, he can't find any bite marks. And he remembers seeing that individual earlier in that evening. And all of them go to Sarlacc's church, where Sarlacc sent some of this individual's friends. And eventually they're able to get some information, making the long story short. And they're able to intercept a couple people that are smuggling some stuff, attempting to bring it into Ivywood. And at the end of issue 1, there's a setup. You're not exactly sure if this outbreak and these drugs are related in any way, or if it's just coincidental. And these individuals are just in the middle of the night, just catching a little bit of a lead and seeing where this metaphorical rabbit hole goes.
Okay. What's the town they're in?
The town's name is Ivywood.
Okay, Ivy Wood. And we've got four characters, and maybe we could explore them a little more, because I think that because I knew I needed a little help with that too, because I wasn't involved in this one until I got a copy to be able to read. Who are the four characters? One of them, let's start on the top of the picture of issue one. You've got this lizard-like guy. Who is that?
So that fella's name is Madrakis Darthul. He doesn't know much about his species. He was purchased as an egg and raised by humans. What he does know is a species, it's hard for the common tongue to pronounce. The closest that a human or an elf could pronounce the species, it's pronounced something like weir. And basically, Madrakis is a descendant of a large kaiju-like electric eel that lives out in the ocean. And because of this, he has a couple of very nice benefits. One of them is he's a very large specimen. He's over 6 feet, or rather 6.5 feet in height. His body weight exceeds 350 pounds. And through limited amounts of storage, he's able to essentially vomit lightning, which is a pretty cool little trait there. Despite all of this, his biggest, most impressive quality about him is actually his brains. He has a huge affinity towards the arcane, and he likes to dabble in that when he can. Ivywood, he's not a fan of, and if you've read issue one at the start, it kind of infers that he doesn't really want to be there. In fact, at one point, some guards recognize him, and he says, Ivywood's charges against me have been dropped. And nothing else is really said about that, but you could tell that he is definitely outside of the terrible, terrible trope of big guy is dumb and is good for nothing but a meat shield for that first little bit of battle when he just absorbs all of those arrows or bullets or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's actually highly intelligent. He's not very charismatic, or I guess the best way to put it is any charisma he has, it comes from the place of an introvert. He's not really interested in attention.
Interesting.
The colors and that brass armor he wears, the very little he knows about his species, he tries to reflect accordingly. And I wouldn't say he has identity issues, but he is searching of ways to express who am I kind of thing. Simply put, since he can't really hide what he looks like, he does the opposite. He just embraces the look. Despite the fact of wanting to be left alone, he has a little bit of a contradiction there.
He's got a sword too, I see.
So his sword is actually, its name is Urus, and there's a lovely story behind that, but that's a story for another time.
Okay. All right, so let's see. We go down the picture. We've got the first human guy they come across. He looks like blonde with a beard, and he's got some kind of a axe or something?
Yeah, so that is Sarlacc. That is a full-blooded dwarf. His people actually left the mountains. They didn't want to mine. They took interest in working the fields and being farmers. Now, as stubborn dwarves can go, these dwarves decided to farm in the middle of a swampland, and over time, through generations, terraform from the inside out, turning the swamp into fertile growing lands. Now, because of this, his specific culture of dwarves, they're very, very comfortable with both tracking and pacifying things that go bump in the night, as one could imagine what swamps would look like in a fantasy setting. Now, when he was leaving his youth, he felt compelled to move into this city, Ivywood, which is predominantly human. And, well, basically, he worships this deity referred to only as the divine. And he decided to build a church in Ivywood. It's small and modest. And well, he didn't want to like force his beliefs down anybody's throat or anything like that, but he did want to do good for those less fortunate than him, because he felt that was his calling. So because of his devotion to this deity, he does have some cool little, benefits, we'll call it. And you get to see a little bit more of that in this second issue here. Sarlacc is kind of I'm going to call him a sleeper, if you will, because his stuff, every issue that comes out, his abilities stand out more and more. As you saw in the first issue, he starts off in just his regular street clothes, but when they're about to leave the city, he throws on, he essentially a hooded cloak with a little bit of chainmail on his shoulder and on one of his arms and wielding this giant, beautiful axe. Some refer to him as almost like the holy wild man of the woods, if you will.
Interesting. So how tall is he? Is the other guy is 6.5 feet tall. How tall is he?
He is just over 4 feet. He's four foot two.
Okay, so that's working. How old is he compared to the other people?
Compared to the other people? They're all roughly the same. They range anywhere from late 20s to early 40s. And obviously none of them are human, so that doesn't really give you an idea of how adult or juvenile they are.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's move on to the next one, who is a dark blue. And
so that is Chasgo Blundell. Now, unlike unlike Madrakis, who embraces that he stands out, Chasgo is very different in that respect. So he is a specific type of elf that lives out in a mountain range, which is predominantly riddled with silver deposits. So I don't know if you know this about in real life, if humans consume enough silver, it actually tattoos their skin and it turns their skin blue. They look like Smurfs. You can look up on YouTube one guy who is really famous for it. He was on Oprah once. Chasgo's people, his elves, have that same effect. However, because it's fantasy, that all of this silver running through their veins is also gives them some resistances to magic. His people would be considered xenophobic. They do not like outsiders. In fact, they're quite a primitive culture. They're very vicious and savage. Many individuals steer clear of that mountain range, and Chasgo's people, these blue-skinned elves, better known as Argers, they are the kind of things that children make scary bedtime stories over. So, Chasgo essentially, in the ends of his childhood, felt he was kind of in between the rock and a hard place. On one end, he felt his people were very dysfunctional and he wanted to leave. But on the flip side, anybody that sees his kind would kill him on sight. He was actually visited by an individual known only as Annette, and she wanted him to be a champion for goals that can be extrapolated upon another time. But essentially, she's able to give him some magical gifts, which in turn fortified why he had to leave the mountain range. The coolest thing about these Argers, I shouldn't say cool, I should say fascinating. They actually look at magic as an abomination, and they believe their life on the mountain and essentially worshiping the mountain is why they're so resistant to magic. But in reality, it's just the element in their system. But Chasgo, with these magical abilities, he would be killed by his people if anybody ever saw him use them. So one of the gifts he was given is he's actually able to hide his appearance. So he adopted a persona, a human persona, and has been living in Ivywood for quite some time. He's been there long enough, he's actually worked his way up the ranks. He's the representative of one of the local nobles there. And that's kind of funny if you think about it, because he's really dancing close to danger. If he was ever exploited, as I was already saying, he'd be killed on spot. But with that said, he has... definitely has very good connections with that city, and there's been some good benefits for him in that respect.
Interesting. So does he have to change back, or can he stay in this other form as long as he wants?
As long as he's thinking about it, he can do it. If you were to think about closing one eye, you could do that all day. You would have to be thinking about it all the time, though. And it's kind of a similar thing. It's not a feat that exhausts him, but it is something he has to be focused on.
Interesting. Okay, so that gives him a little bit of a limitation there with stuff.
Yes, definitely. Okay,
now the fourth one, the one on the bottom, he's the one that looks sort of human. He's carrying a shield and a hammer, looks like. Who's that guy?
So that's a little guy. His name is Dunan Eni, and he's actually, he has a dwarf father, and he has a gnome mother, and he is being a half of each. He has actually has a difficult time fitting in with either bloodline or either culture. He draws from both bloodlines, and he loves his family and stuff, but because of this unique dynamic of self-identity, you might see a pattern here, but he's just as likely to bond to a close friend as he would to a family member. And I guess a word you could use, he's a very loyal individual. One unique thing about him is he has been studying smithing through influence of his dwarven father. He's been studying smithing, but something he's found out by accident is he's actually able to manipulate metals and crystalline structures. And it's very similar to how his gnomish mother can control nature out in the wild. He isn't exactly sure. He doesn't know anybody else with any ability similar to this. And from what he gathers, it has to do with a combination of both bloodlines. But he's not exactly sure. You'll see a telescope sitting over top of his shoulder. When his goggles are on, he's jury-rigged that telescope. It's got a gem on it instead of a lens. And it's synced to his eyes. So he can actually have it blast raw arcana out of it. It's like a concussive force, which is really, really neat. And I mentioned before how Sarlacc, the full-blooded dwarf, just over 4 feet. Dunan is 3'10". So he's just a little tiny guy, but he is definitely an interesting individual in regards to his outlook on people that are around him. And even though he stands out, he knows how to fit in, and he does know how to get along with his surroundings.
There's a drug that's involved with this stuff, and according to the first issue, it's called the Weave.
Yes, yeah, so its nickname is Weave, and there's no context to why it's nicknamed that. It has some of its side effects have to do with the organs eventually stop working. It's almost like a state of paralysis. And if you take too much of it, your body stops functioning and you could die by essentially suffocating. There's not much more context to that other than it comes in a vial and it's ingested.
And the people who get affected by it are called deadheads?
So that's actually just a joke that Dunan says. He says, are these deadheads? But nobody calls it that. He just says random things like that. Essentially, they're zombies or undead. Okay. Now, here's the thing. By halfway through that first issue, mm-hmm. when these four go to track down two individuals that were under the influence of this stuff, only one of them has turned. So the four are not quite sure how this works because all three of those individuals were under the influence of Weave. Only two of them have turned. So there's a little bit of a curveball there. They're not exactly sure.
Interesting. Okay, but apparently this has become a big problem in the city where they're at.
The outbreak was pacified. Weave, it's an up-and-coming drug. It is unknown its origin, and it is becoming an issue with ruining some life, yes. Another disclaimer to this story. This story happens to have drugs in it. It's not a pro or anti-drug PSA or anything like that. I just think it was a cool dynamic to add in as we were putting this story together.
It's interesting because medieval times, I haven't seen a lot of medieval stories that had a lot of drugs or this kind of thing. So
right.
This is kind of a unique take.
Yes. Yes. And one thing I really wanted to do, this is my first time on the creative side of a comic book, this 3-issue miniseries. And I can't control how good or bad I am. That's up to the readers to decide. One thing I could do is I could surround myself with talent. So For example, Dan Kemp, he's been a very faithful colorist. I've been very grateful to have him on. He's colored over 100 issues of Spawn, essentially 50 to 150. My interior artist right now for issue 2, Victor Medina, he's really, really doing a good job. In regards to the story, I wanted something that I felt was worthy of the industry. That doesn't mean it's going to be the best or the worst. I just wanted somebody to pick it up and read it and be like, yeah, this was worth the buy, as opposed to, I guess it's okay kind of thing. I've been getting a pretty good wave of positive responses, which is definitely encouraging.
Okay. Now, talk a little bit about, well, first thing, why is it called the Madcaps?
Well, if you look up the word madcap, all that means is an eccentric individual. And they're in Ivywood, which is a predominantly human town. And none of them are human. So they kind of stand out like a sore thumb. That's essentially where I came up with the word.
Okay, very good. Now, the can you give us a little bit of the history of this series? My understanding is you developed this with some friends that you were doing. It's like a Dungeons and Dragons kind of setup.
Yeah. So originally, I used to live across country, and I had to leave for work, and I left all of my friends, my family, and everything else. How long ago is that now? That will be next month. That'll be 18 years ago, and I've been back to visit, but I never moved back. I've got a wife and kids now, and my job is great and stuff. But with that said, I've got friends, and I'm always looking for excuses to hang out with them. So I kept on trying to find ways to hang out on webcam, and then I thought, you know what? I've never played Dungeons and Dragons before. What do you guys think about playing? This is like a perfect hangout opportunity. They said, sure, but you're being Dungeon Master. So, okay. I bit off a lot. I definitely chewed it all, although it was challenging. But I made up my own lore, my own homebrew. I didn't use any modules or anything like that. And when I first had my friends play, there was definitely some learning curves. But when it comes to Dungeons and Dragons, they have a term that's used a lot. It's called rule of cool. And I definitely had that to a level where my friends were enjoying it. And we just learned as we went. This book is based off of the first campaign I ever did. The only difference is I took the characters that the players were playing as out, and I replaced them with my own characters, ironically, based off of the players that were playing.
Interesting. So if the people who were playing with you looked at this, they might recognize their character in there, or the person they are?
They definitely do. Okay. They've had a good chuckle. I've shown one of them, I gave him the script to read, like the first draft. Mm-hmm. He loved it. And I'm like, okay, good. One of the cool things when you make characters based off of people, one thing I like to do is I like to play up their strengths, but also play up their weaknesses. So one thing I found that was very beneficial there is any of those four characters, they're based off of an individual. All of those individuals that I know, they all actually really appreciate it for both of those reasons.
That's interesting, because like the first person I ever interviewed for this podcast a long time ago was David Peterson, who did Mouse Guard. And I asked him, who are these mice based on? You know, are they like the King Arthur's Round Table? Who are they? I said, oh, no, these are my friends. And I said, really? Because I'd never heard of that back at that time. And he talked about the fact that he knew his friends, so he knew how they would respond in certain situations.
Yes.
So it made the writing a lot easier for him, he said.
Yes. And the thing is, although I do understand saying it makes the writing easier, it is per se easier. You've got more material to work with, but it just speaks to you. You just know, put in this scenario, this is how they'd speak to each other. This is how they'd agree. This is how they disagree. And this is the funny stuff that would happen. And this is how they would get out of this scenario.
So this is kind of a little different thing from you did this Dungeons and Dragons thing, But then you kind of put your own spin on it, sounds like.
Yes, I did. One thing I definitely am thankful for is when I originally did this campaign for D&D, I went off of my own lore, so it was very easy not to trample onto any type of like copyright infringement or anything like that. And despite when you take out the characters that were played originally, they were basically the D&D part. The rest was mine, all made up. So when I took those characters out and put in my own, yes, it is medieval fantasy, but after that, in regards to D&D relation, there's actually surprisingly not too much the same. It's quite unique.
Interesting, interesting. So let's see. How long ago did you say you played the D&D thing?
Well over a decade now.
A decade now. So when did you actually start converting it into a script that you could use for a comic?
3 years ago.
3 years ago.
The first issue took me over 2 years to put together for a couple of reasons. The two big ones is I'm very careful. As I said before, I wanted the talent to be making something worthy of the industry. And the other one, I guess financial, because money doesn't grow on trees. But with that said, I just took my time and I started with my interior artist. And when I had all of the interiors, pencil and ink done, then the next step, I went to a colorist and I found Dan Kemp. And then he had it colored, and then I went into covers, and then I went into lettering, and it built from there. This time around, it's been significantly faster because I have an established network, I have a plan, and it's put together a lot quicker.
So you did a Kickstarter for issue number one?
Yes, successfully run. It was a great time. A cool add-on, which will actually be for sale in issue two's Kickstarter, is a map of the local area of where the story takes place. There's a bunch of cool stuff. There's some cool add-ons, including blankets and t-shirts. The blankets, we're calling them plush parchments, because you can hang them up if you want. We're choosing a lot of the art that looks the most like paintings. Mm-hmm. So when you look at these blankets, it would look cool hanging on your wall, or obviously draped across your shoulders as well.
Wow, okay. So 3 years ago, you did the first Kickstarter, and now you're doing the second Kickstarter, right?
To clarify, 3 years ago, I started issue one, but I didn't launch the Kickstarter until it ran last May.
Okay. So, you know, like you said, you took your time putting the script together.
Yes.
Sure it worked. Okay, very good. Very good. And so you did that on Kickstarter, and... how far along were you with that issue when you did the first Kickstarter?
So the first Kickstarter, I had everything done before the launch. I had everything complete.
Wow.
And like I said, that was 2 years getting up to that point. But I wanted to make sure, because this was my first time, when somebody saw the Kickstarter, they would look at it, it's already done. You just buy in and we'll get it shipped out to you, kind of thing. And my publisher, Philip Russert of Philbo Publishing, that group, Phil did a great job. He ran my Kickstarter for me, being my publisher. Just terrific. I was very happy with the results of how this is all coming together. If you want to check out some cool comics, look up Philbo Publishing. They actually are distributing very soon. Just like how Diamond distributes. So when all three of my issues are done, I'm going to be doing a trade paperback. Mm. And there's a good chance that will be in a local comic shop near you. I'm very excited about that.
Interesting. Of course, you know, right now with Diamond in an interesting phase, we'll see how that all comes out.
Yes, exactly.
So we'll see about it. So, okay. So, well, this is really interesting because so after the first one, you said this one was much faster. When did you start working on the second issue?
Started working on the second issue as soon as issue one's Kickstarter was done. Mm. We've had some, despite the setbacks, this is taking a lot shorter of a time. A very big critical setback. Our interior artist, he had to abandon his house because of the LA fires. Fortunately, he's back now, and he's just finishing up. And our colorist, Dan Kemp, is coloring it as we're going. So it's coming together really nicely. Issue number three, I don't know when I want to launch it. I mean, it would be cool to do it earlier than 2026, but we got to keep our ear to the ground and see when an ideal time is to release it.
Because right now we're in a state of flux.
Yes.
That goes. Well, I do have to ask you, though, did the pandemic have anything to do with the first issue taking a while?
Well, last year was 2024. Mm-hmm. 3 years prior was 2021. That's when I started putting the script together. Mm. I did have a full-time job. I've got a wife and kids. Mm-hmm. I don't think the pandemic was a variable at all. If I think back, I don't think so.
Interesting, because there's a lot of comics that are coming out that people were sitting around wondering what to do with themselves during the pandemic, and a lot of them started writing comics, which is kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, if you're idle, you could start pursuing passions, right?
Yep. But that's the thing. So the pandemic on some things were really bad, but the pandemics for other people was a godsend.
Yes.
There are musicians I discovered on YouTube who were buried. There's a father, son, Matt, and I forget the name of the family, but the father's daughter started singing together, and they just blossomed because people were watching YouTube because they had nothing better to do.
Right.
And now they're like successful. They have their own, they're putting out collections and doing all kinds of stuff. So that the pandemic was a big deal for them and really helped them as far as that goes.
Yes.
That's interesting. So I'm just kind of curious, though. Was it story? Was that the reason why you went with three issues?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Originally, I wanted to fit it in two. Mm-hmm. And the reason it went to a third is I didn't know how to condense it without taking away the quality of the storytelling. Mm. Another one is, like I already said, this is my first time on this side of the comic book, on the creative side. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be quite arrogant to say I'm going to make an ongoing monthly and I'm going to be a millionaire off of this. I just wanted to dabble in the waters and just express this story and be happy to go through the experience.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many people come to comics and say, I'm going to get rich. And the bad news, that is very, very rare that actually happens to.
Yeah. Yeah. My big thing is I wanted to make sure that, like I said before, I wanted this story to be worthy of the industry. And after that, I wanted to just express this story. Like the grounds of this story is, and I'm sure you and anybody listening right now, everybody has friends they don't get to see enough, especially as they age. Mm-hmm. And the older you get, the less opportunity you have to see your friends. And this book kind of does a tongue-in-cheek right at the start. Hey, we're going to meet up. Oh, well, we got a problem, so we might as well help mm-hmm. with this problem. And mm-hmm. anytime you see your friends, it's recharging. If mm-hmm. it doesn't matter if you get to spend a week with them or 5 minutes, mm-hmm. you walk away from that experience like, man, I needed that. Mm-hmm. And this book is an homage to that level of camaraderie. It's just told with a medieval fantasy theme expressed through the medium of comic book.
Interesting. And it's so fascinating. Well, I got to ask you then, are you a comic book fan of what the industry is doing or have been a fan?
Well, I have a love-hate relationship with comics. okay. I was born in the Orwellian year of 1984.
Okay.
And I grew up through some really cool milestones, especially with DC, especially with Marvel. I remember the breaking of the bat. I remember Doomsday killing Superman. I remember seeing those comics on the spinners. I remember all the highs and lows of McFarlane's influence on Spider-Man and then Image causing everybody to up their game with the artwork, which ended up being a problem because people stopped focusing on story as much mm-hmm. and having an imbalanced style of storytelling, which eventually the industry course corrected. Mm-hmm. I went through all the highs and lows, like the Peter Parker clone saga, and on and on and on, and then eventually getting past the year 2000 and going into things like Civil War, the comic, and really appreciating all of those variables. Right now, my focus is I just want to tell a cool story. One of the benefits of this three-issue miniseries There's nothing you have to know leading up. There's not 60 years worth of lore you have to have memorized so you understand a bunch of insider trading baseball. Mm-hmm. There's none of that. It is just a story you could sit there and you could say, I don't know what to expect. All right, I appreciate what I read.
Because I always tell people the X-Men lost me a long time ago because every 10 years or so, they drag up some item of continuity that I didn't know about and they drag it into the forefront. See, this happened in X-Men number 2230 or something like that.
And yes, I go, that's what? Very true.
What was that? I have no idea what the heck that was all about. So I had a roommate whose name was Scott for a while, and he liked Scott Summers. And so I bought the books for a while. I had no idea what was going on in the books. And after a while, he got bored with it because he couldn't tell what was going on either. So we stopped with that.
X-Men had a big problem being the movie rights being owned by Fox. Well, Marvel wanted their movies to do better than Fox's Marvel movies. So in the comics, they started reflecting that. I don't know if you remember a handful of years ago, X-Men versus the Inhumans. And at the time, there's the TV show, The Inhumans. And the tinfoil hat theory is that Marvel was going to try and make the Inhumans the next thing and downplay the X-Men so less people would go to the X-Men movies.
Right.
And like all of that stuff, my comic has none of that baggage attached.
That's interesting because I honestly have to say indie comics are some of the most interesting stuff out today.
Yeah, I agree.
Because they're not having to be, not putting it out month after month after month for 20, 30, 40 years. And all they do is just go on and tell a good story and they're done when they're done with
this. Yes.
Which is, you know, because if you're putting out Batman every month, and of course I'm a Batman guy, but after a while, you know, you kind of go, see, this is why the absolute Batman now I think is going so well, because we're going someplace we haven't been before.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a very different Batman, and things are very different going on in there. And I haven't seen that before. It was like recently when Batman was supposed to marry Catwoman. And I was like, right. Ooh, I said, that's interesting. I have never seen Batman be married before. Superman has been married and it's actually working out really well. Maybe Batman should get married. And then at the last second, they turned around and jumped away from each other in the darkness. And I was like, boy, was that a letdown.
Yeah, all of that for just it. It just feels like sometimes because a monthly quota has to be met, there's a lot of times where an issue feels like a filler issue. And when you look at something like an indie comic, in my case, when you read it, that's the whole benefit. Like mine, I tried to make it two issues. The only reason it's three is because there's so much awesome in it, I couldn't condense it anymore. I wasn't like, how can I turn this three-issue story into five?
That's ironic because, you know, the Absolute Batman started out was the first arc was supposed to be five issues, but they got behind. And so now it's going to be six issues because they had to do a fill-in issue.
Yeah, not interested. As soon as I hear something like that, I'm not interested.
I mean, Scott Snyder to me is, whenever Scott Snyder does Batman, it's magic to me. But yeah, you can tell that the third issue is not, or third or fourth, whatever one it was, it's not up to the level of the rest of them. So even though the story's interesting, kind of a little background story on Batman in that period. But it's just not the same. But
yeah, I hear you.
It's just something. So where are you now as far as making comics and stuff like that? Obviously, the second one's about done, so you've only got like one more to go.
Issue three, I already have the script done, and I actually have three covers done. So that's actually a good segue. Issue one, I had the main cover and four variants, various different artists. I'll name... Well, you know what? I would take forever talking about all the artist talents, but let's just say one of the guys that painted Madrakis in issue one on that cover, he did the cover art for Shinobi for the NES. We had Harvey Salteras who drew Sarlacc holding a beheaded monster. That artist, he drew the first year of volume 2 of Ghost Rider, where Dan Ketch took over as the writer and Johnny Blaze hunted him down. This issue, I have. I also have a main cover and then four others. And again, it's talent upon talent upon talent. And the colorists, the inkers, all of it put together, it just makes this beautiful project that it still baffles me that all this talent bought into stuff that existed in my head only leading up to this point. And issue number three of the covers are done. I might do as many as six. We'll see. But I can't even talk about the covers. it's nothing short of torture, man.
So, okay. So now you see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yes.
With as far as Madcaps go, is that going to be the end of the Madcaps, or are there going to be other stories you want to tell, or what else are you going to do after that?
Myself and Chad Perkins are kicking a story around. Unfortunately, that's all I can say about it. In regards to the Madcaps, once these three issues are done, I'm going to walk away from it, at least for now. And I don't know if I'll ever come back. And the reason for that is I want to end on a high note, and I just want to see this project complete. Mm-hmm. If it gets a decent following, I do have stories in that world that would definitely fit in very well. But again, the readers decide if my stuff is any good. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't get a lot of traction, I'm content with leaving it at these three issues.
Well, you know, reality gets in the way of comics at times.
That's true as well.
And you've got a family and, yes, and work to do and stuff like that. And that can sometimes, you know, the demands there might just get in the way of doing any more in the whatever the Madcap-averse is. You know, so you've got to kind of, you know, you have to play it by ear. Sometimes you take a break, it refreshes your storytelling in something like this. So maybe take a few years away and then, yes, come back. And you might have some fresh ideas to do.
It sure beats hitting a monthly quota, that's for sure.
Well, that in some ways I feel sorry for DC and Marvel because, you know, right now in Marvel, they've got the guy that was the host of Venom is now the host of Carnage.
Right.
Who is a Venom spinoff. And I'm kind of, now we got a new Venom. We don't know who it is. And of course, they're making sure that we get five issues in before they reveal who it is. But to me, I'm like, once that's revealed, I'm going to go, oh, that's enough of that. I'm off of that. Let me go running away with something else. But I'm right, sure they're going to try to figure some way to extend it out. They did a Venom series where, of all things, Flash Thompson from Spider-Man time, he actually lost his legs and they gave him the symbiote. And
yes, the symbiote, I remember that.
I enjoyed that. Agent Venom or something they called it. Agent
Venom, yes.
They're talking about making a TV show or something out of it. And I was like,
Well, one interesting thing about that is at the time, Eddie Brock didn't have the Venom symbiote. So he ended up, his white blood cells were able to take on characteristics of the symbiote. You know about that when he was anti-Venom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
I really liked how that kind of put itself back together because everybody loves Eddie Brock as Venom. So the anti-Venom symbiote, essentially Flash Thompson having that, that was an interesting way to wrap that up.
Well, I love the fact that he couldn't wear it too long because then it would bond with him.
Right.
Which I like. So that whole business. And I like the fact that they're going to make something out of it.
Yes.
To me, that was one of I'm more of a DC guy. I like superheroes. I like people who are bigger than life. Peter Parker is running around, skulking around, trying to get away from the landlord because he doesn't want to pay the rent or can't pay the rent.
Mr. Dickovich, yeah.
See, that's too close to reality for me. I'd rather see Superman, although they took away, they made it that he revealed his identity for a while and that went away. And I like the fact that he's married to Lois, and I like the fact that he's, you know, bigger than life. And so for me, I struggle with the Marvel books, honestly. But to me, see, your stories to me are much more grounded, but I also like the fact that it's set in a different era, so that and you don't use modern. Oh, I hate when they do that. When people go back like to the West and they all talk in current jargon. And I'm like, they didn't say that back in those days.
Yeah, mine has kind of like a hybrid. I try to lean away from modern, but I use it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. But it's not so obvious that it's like a stumbling block to me. To me, it's done well enough that I like that. It's much more, this is the way people probably would talk, in that era. So me, I like it. So I think it's a great way to do it. So I don't know. I hope when you get a chance after a break, because I, as somebody who has helped with comics behind the scenes, I can tell you that it is an exhausting process at times. And so you probably want to take a chance to recover a little bit and then say, I'd like to do that again after a little break.
Yes.
That's probably going to be the case. But I enjoyed the first issue. I'm dying to see the second one. I think it's going to be a great one. Now, let's see. When does the Kickstarter is going to start? On April 1st, you said?
April 1st. It's going to be available all of April. Okay. And as I already mentioned, there's multiple different covers. There's mm-hmm. there's some really cool add-ons. Some of them I can't even say as of yet. Mm-hmm. Some of the art will be on some t-shirts and some blankets and some other cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's a theme, and I've said it already, but man, this is torture not being able to tell everything here.
Well, but you know, that's a good sign, though. When there's stuff going on you can't talk about, that means there's reasons to keep your ear to the ground and keep listening and waiting to see what comes. So I like that. So that's a good sign. If you could blurt out everything, I'd be like, well, there's nothing to listen for. But this is kind of a lot of fun, I do have to say. I like the fact that you've chosen such an interesting cast to go along and do these
Thank
different
you.
Kinds of things. I find the characters interesting. I find what they say and do really interesting. So,
do you have a favorite character?
The one, it's so odd to me because it's just the opposite of me. The great big tall lizardy guy is my favorite of the bunch.
You like him. One thing that, like back in the day of when Power Rangers just started the kids mm-hmm. show, mm-hmm. there was that sixth ranger, the Green Ranger, mm-hmm. and everybody thought he was so cool. And I'm mm-hmm. starting to see a trend that everybody likes Madrakis, this large lizard, much like they like the Green Ranger. Like he does mm-hmm. a lot of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or the Green Ranger, he'd do all this cool stuff, but seldom gave the finishing blow, but he was always the flair of the group.
Interesting. Well, I like because he's, it's like my favorite doctor in Doctor Who is the Matt Smith one, because he didn't sit around and have to get dragged into stuff. He would see something right, so let's go fix it. And I love that about his character, because the other ones were just like, oh no, do we have to go out again? And I'd be always like, oh, come on now. You got this whole galaxy to explore, and you just want to sit around and complain. So to me, I like somebody who goes out and does stuff. And that's kind of like what I think about Batman, too. He does not stand back and say, oh, let's wait and see what happens. So you can
right.
dive in and make things happen. So that's what I like about that character. He is an action guy.
Yes.
I really like that. So anyway, it's called The Madcaps, and be sure to get out there. I'm not exactly sure when this is going to post, but if this is early, you can get out there and you can sign up to get to receive updates and stuff like that, which is going to help Ray here as much as possible. So whenever this comes out, be sure to go there and support it. Let's see. I'm not sure what it's going to be called. I like being able to. It's the Madcaps issue 2, looks like. It's going to have hyphens between it.
Yeah, Madcaps issue number 2. The sub-story for these three issues is called Perilous Vices, which has mm-hmm. to do with this mystery of Weave and whether or not has anything to do with the undead outbreak that happened in the first issue.
Really interesting. Well, lots of fun. I do have to say it's a great book to read. It's so much fun. I think people are going to really enjoy it. You can get the first issue, right? If you go to issue 2, that comes with it too.
Yes. Yeah. Issue 1 and 2 will be available. And, like we were already saying, this story is, it's got action. It's got great pacing. It's got a little bit of comedy. It has interesting characters, interesting character development, as much as you can get in three short issues. Each issue builds off the last. All of them are enjoyable, but as they say, I've said this in other podcasts, as they say in volleyball, bump, set, and spike. Issue number 3 spikes, and it spikes hard. And I guarantee you, by the time you're finished issue three, after reading all three of them, you will definitely be content with the result. You'd be like, yeah, that was worth the payoff. I'm glad I read that. And I can say that with conviction.
I love a good ending.
Yes.
It's one thing with current comics. It never ends. It's just endlessly going on and on and on. But a good ending is so enjoyable. So much
fun. Yes.
The word I would use to describe this book is adventure.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
And that's one of my favorite words when it comes to comics. So that tells you I liked it a lot. So it's
thank you very much.
So, Ray, I hope there's all kinds of... Now, if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
So you can find me on... well, let's start with Facebook. I'm known as DM Ray. DM is just short for Dungeon Master. You can find my Madcaps Facebook page. You can find me on Instagram and what I like to call Twixter as Raymond the DM. DM Ray was taken, unfortunately. Those are all of my critical socials worth following. If you do not follow them, the most important thing you could do to help me out is if you're listening to this before April of 2025, then you can definitely click on the follow on the pre-launch Madcaps issue 2, where you'll also get access to or the chance to also purchase number 1. If you're listening to this after April 1st of 2025, all of that month of April, it will be available for purchase. And as you've heard Wayne say and myself, this book is based off of what I've heard from every reader. I am very encouraged to say confidently that it is worth the chance on a story you have no idea what you're getting yourself into. I can promise you that's a good thing this time around.
Well, good. That's fun. I like a story that I say, well, I'm so glad I bought that. I think that's this book is going to do that for people. So all I can say is keep up the wonderful stuff. I'm dying to see what you have in mind for a big conclusion at the end. That's going to be great fun to read. So
right on.
I have to do that. So keep it up and have fun in real life too. And
of course,
keep doing the wonderful stuff with the comics because you're off to a good start.
Right on. I really appreciate that.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Be back next week when we'll have much more on the comics universes. But until then, keep reading your comics.